Financial technology, or fintech, is one of the fastest growing industries in the world today, with New York, London, Tel Aviv, Edinburgh, Singapore, Moscow, and other major cities all vying for a piece of the action. Welcome to Breaking Banks, the first dedicated radio show that focuses on how this new boom is changing everything, from the way we bank to the very concept of money itself. Now, here's your host, Brett King.
Welcome to Breaking Banks this week, the number one global fintech podcast and radio show with over 6.5 million listeners in 180 countries globally. This week, before we get to our show, sponsored by our friends at Pegasystems, we start talking about RegTech and AI and some of the tech involved there. Let's get through the news. Tandem has taken on Hong Kong with a $15 million investment from Convoy and looking to launch their Asia platform across from the new Hong Kong fintech charter licensing. We see that Poland has introduced a regulatory sandbox. But of course, the big news, of course, this week is what's happening in the crypto market with Bitcoin's plunge. But most of this appears to be around forking, not of the Bitcoin code base, but of course, Bitcoin Cash. And this seems to be a bit of a fight between Professor Faustus, as he's known on Twitter, Dr. Craig Wright, who claimed to be Satoshi, and Roger Ver, who some believe was one of the four Satoshis that put together the Bitcoin white paper all those years ago. And between those two fighting over the form of Bitcoin Cash and processing power, we've seen the price of Bitcoin plummet below $5,000 for the first time in well over a year. So we'll see what happens to the space. The other big news, of course, is coming out of China, where we had on the 11th, Singles Day with our good friends Ant Financial. Alibaba, really, with Ant Financial on top of that. But what was really a staggering data point from Singles Day was that 60% of the payments made in China for Singles Day on the Alibaba platform were done using facial biometrics. So for a lot of people who are debating whether China, it's QR codes versus the magnetic stripe or chip and pin or, whatever the card tech is, the plastic that we use out in the West, I think the reality is we need to understand that it's no longer plastic versus QR codes or tokens, NFC tokens versus QR codes. It's simply now facial recognition versus a 16-digit card number. That's the fight that China has brought to our doorsteps, and it's going to be really, really interesting. Anyway, while I was down in Cybos in Sydney a couple of weeks ago, we recorded this interview with Pegasystems regarding the tech they're working on, specifically around AI and how it's going to impact the regulatory space. We also asked our good friend Henry Aslanian to jump in and give us an update on what's happening in the space in terms of supervisory tech and how AI is going to really influence changes in things like money laundering, anti-money laundering regulation, and how it might even change the legal structures of regulation as we put regulations in Codebase. So a really interesting show for you guys today. Let's hear first from Rita Kosla at Pegasystems.
So we are here at Cybos with Pegasystems, Ritu Kosla. Kosla is a very famous name, of course, in the VC space. So you're not related, are you?
No, we wish we were. But we're not.
Now, Pegasystems is, of course, involved in many different industries, healthcare, financial services, and so forth. You work with Pega based out in the U.S.
Yes.
Whereabouts in the U.S. are you?
Massachusetts.
Yeah. I don't even, how are you supposed to say Massachusetts?
Massachusetts.
Yeah, is that
I'm actually Canadian.
And, oh, really?
When I moved to Massachusetts.
Yeah.
I had to learn how to call it as well.
How long have you been out there?
I have been there for 17 years.
Wow, okay. Yeah. So, what do you call someone who lives in Massachusetts? A Massachusettsian or? A Bostonian, of course,
yeah,
yes. You're in Boston, right?
I am. Okay. Boston, right in the city.
Well, I've done a lot of work with Jim Pallotta out there. Do you know him?
No.
He's part owner of the Celtics and AS Roma, but he runs Raptor Capital out there in Boston and stuff
right
like that. But
anyway. Right near where the Celtics
Oh, very cool. Very cool. Now, so tell me a bit more about Pega Systems. How long have you guys been coming to Cybers?
We've been coming, believe it or not, since 1983.
Wow.
Yes. And we had a tiny little booth, apparently, then. I wasn't at Pega Systems.
Right.
Our founder and CEO was. So we've been here almost every year since then.
So how does Pega get value out of an event like Cybers?
Largest business as a whole, and we started traditionally in payment inception, and we've been working with the largest global bank for many, many years, so
right,
35 years or so, and a lot of these banks here with their actually partners of ours as well, we collaborate, and we've been collaborating with them for a long time, so for us, we get to see our friends, our family. We talk about what we're doing, the innovative stuff.
It's the Cybers party time. That's true. Well, yeah, so make sure you get down here at 4 o'clock for the networking opportunity, because we're going to book signing today, but anyway. You developed these long-term relationships, but how has Pega Systems changed over the 17 years you've been with it? Because now we've got AI and all this tech, so...
So I've actually been with Pega for 10 and a half.
Okay, so 10 and a half, you're sorry.
So we've seen a massive transformation. So, everyone's talking about digital transformation and banking, and it's a buzzword, right? I actually run our client lifecycle management, anti-money laundering, financial crime, and KYC business globally. And what we really see from a transformation perspective is AI. We all hear about AI, and it's a buzzword, just like robotics is. But I think what we've seen from an AI perspective is the fact that AI standalone is not magic in a box.
No, it's got to have an application.
Exactly. Right. It has to have an application, it has to be controlled, it needs to be transparent. You don't want AI running risky behavior.
Just hang on a second. So we're talking about AI. So in terms of AI, or the technology that Pega uses, how has that sort of changed or transformed Pega Systems over the last 10 years, what you've been with them?
AI is a component of, we're very strong in digital process automation. That's our core as a platform.
What's the difference between digital process automation and robotic process automation?
Well, it's a very good question. So if you think of robots, and I think of them sometimes as dumb rogue robots, what they do is they essentially, they take mundane tasks or simple tasks and they automate them.
Right.
What digital automation does, and digital process automation as a whole, it's taking very, very, it's taking data, it's taking all kinds of inputs, it's making sense of those inputs, including using things like AI. So anything from reading an email, creating a case, parsing that case, doing anything from multi-jurisdictional, multi-product onboarding. So in this world, that we're in right now at Cybos, we're talking about very sophisticated banking. And digital process automation allows banks to simplify.
Take the friction out.
Take the silos out, join things up, front to back office, provide a seamless experience, provide customer engagement across the board, to whether it's anything from a service request to a relationship manager, interacting with a client, all the way through to, fulfilling or making a payment. Robots, in my view, are components. So that, if you think of rogue robots, running around, and you don't want that. So robotics is just
like the T-1000 Terminator.
You don't want those rogue robots running around.
You want to have structure to it.
Yes, and that's what applications do. Technology does from a digital process automation. So robotics becomes a feature that provides tremendous value, but it's not the be-all and end-all.
Right. So you still, right now, we talk about AI as this catch-all phrase, but what's important, like with anything, is you need that real application of it. You need a way for it to factor into revenue or relationship or the efficiency of the business overall.
And you also need control and transparency.
Yeah.
Transparency and control are critical in AI. So if you think of AI. AI becomes the brain of your application or of your operation. But so everything is really centralized through AI. It's learning, it's taking data, and if you think of, you know, if you go on level one, you see these massive banks, and we're talking about billions and billions of transactions on a day-to-day basis. So you don't want that AI to learn risky behavior, right?
Right.
You want to make sure it's controlled, it's transparent, we know it's exactly what's happening, and there is a real use for it.
You know, there is some concern about biases that we have in human processes transferring over to artificial intelligence, right?
Pokemon Go, and everybody follows that. And it's a similar concept with AI. I mean, you know, you don't want AI learning these trends that may be risky. So the fact that within technology and within our technology, we can control that and have that full end-to-end transparency, then you see massive, massive value. If you do not have controls and people use the buzzword of AI, you're really, again, you know, learning risky behaviors potentially.
So can you talk to the sort of, obviously AI is a fairly recent thing for you guys. Can you talk about what changes you've made organizationally, you know, and how you've built out an AI team at Pega itself and what that looks like?
Yeah. So AI is inherent across our technology, so everyone should understand AI within our technology. And I think some of the core changes that we've made, if you think 35 years ago, you know, at Sybos, we were very much a back office. So fixing
right.
back office processes and automating them over the past, you know, I would say even 5 years, we've been very much focused on the front office. So how do we streamline not only the front office, so these, you know, great relationship managers that are here and salespeople, but also the customer engagement component. So really providing a seamless experience for the client, front to back office, and also driving competitive differentiation for the bank.
Mm.
So we've heard a lot, we've been in meetings all morning and all day, and it's only day one, but we've heard banks talk about everything from, you know, what if we could get rid of all of this customer service component, so meaning the fact that you wouldn't have somebody call in, you would, it wouldn't
right.
be a service. So if you think of Apple, that was the example I heard today. You know, when was the last time you called
the Apple call center? Yeah.
Never.
Yeah.
Right? Have you ever done that?
No.
No.
So they've designed people out of the process at Apple. And so that's part of what you're working on at Pega, right?
I don't think we are. I think we like people.
Okay. So you've tried to create tools to make people more productive in that relationship, right?
Absolutely. But I think what the banks are saying is we want to focus on the customer, we want to focus on digitization. We want to focus on simplifying client onboarding across channels. We want to make sure that we're compliant from a regulatory perspective.
Right.
And we want to do this all digitally. Right?
So seeing a human only should happen if there's extraordinary value from that interaction.
Absolutely.
Okay.
So if you think of, you know, when you're doing bank-to-bank banking here, correspondent banking,
yep.
Those relationships are high value.
Yeah.
You don't want that high value relationship manager dealing with regulatory, right? Or, you know, concentrating on the money laundering.
Mm.
You want to be able to onboard a customer in, you know, 1 day or 2 days versus 2 days versus 300 days. And we also want to make sure that people, you know, stay compliant with hundreds of thousands of things for money laundering rules that constantly change and keep regulators
I want to get into the AML stuff a bit later in the interview because there's a lot of stuff. But talk to me more about the skill sets that Pega is sort of evolving, or you know, can you talk about how big your AI team is, or you know, the size of the organization generally? Wow, that's quite big in revenue. Yep. Yep. What is that? So for those that aren't familiar, to explain that a bit more detail.
So,
We like learning new things on the show.
So I could not write a line of code to save my life.
Right.
The fact that we can use basic metaphors or decision tables or processes and things that are in plain business English, if you want to call it that,
right.
And the system is actually generating the code, you're actually doing this real time. It's a very different philosophy than having a bunch of coders.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you look at the mix of them, try to get the math engineering team, the math, but we also have a lot of business people that work with our clients to develop solutions without coding. So the system generates.
So it's sort of an automated code generation. That's really interesting.
Well, it's, you know, not low code, zero code. I mean,
right.
Revolutionizing the way banks or anybody can actually build and deploy software.
Yeah. Now, you talked about one of the big themes that's running at Sibos is client acquisition, client onboarding.
Yeah.
And, of course, we've got these challenger banks around the world now, and all of them can digitally onboard a customer in real time.
Yeah.
So there's obviously some pressure here on traditional players to be able to do that. So that real-time onboarding process for a customer, it really then comes down, and, you know, with your AML expertise, this is quite interesting, because I have to be able to say as a bank, I know who you are. And so in a world where a customer is no longer walking into a branch and presenting a driver's license, which could be fake from China anyway, but you know, and no longer doing that face-to-face, how do you qualify someone and say, I know who they are and good enough to say now I can take their deposit? So what's the data, you know, process to that so I can digitally onboard a customer? Like facial recognition tech and things like that.
Which allows you to do real time onboarding.
Yep.
So that's a simple thing.
Right.
You know, when we're talking about onboarding you or I, you know,
yep.
You may be extremely wealthy, but I don't know. And it may be.
I'm not going to disclose that on the radio. Yeah.
So, you know, but when you get into more complex institutions, so if you're onboarding a Coca Cola or another bank, you're talking about a very sophisticated hierarchy, and the complexity of those rules significantly increases. And you will not be able to digitally do that. But what technology allows you to do, so for instance, our client onboarding, client lifecycle management technology, we're simplifying that. So if you're opening a cash management account in Hong Kong, and you're massive big corporations like Coca-Cola or IBM, you know, you've already been onboarded in the UK, for instance, but because of traditional silos, in Hong Kong, you go through that same 200-day process again. What we're able to do is create a master global view of the customer. The system can apply rules to say, oh, we already know that we have 90% of it. Now we just need to use Hong Kong-specific regulations.
Okay.
Okay. So now, or you may be able to break the process because you follow the higher standards, and those rules are inherent.
Very cool. Very cool. So now you're obviously, you said, a US listed company, but what's your footprint globally like? You know, where are you active most in terms of your financial services practice?
So of course, in the US, New York, Boston, but also we have offices all over Europe, all over Asia Pacific. We opened our headquarters for Asia Pac last Friday in Sydney, so we are a global company.
Where do you do your development? Do you do that in the US or offshore? You do?
Yes, we do. But we also have offshore.
Yep.
Development in India. We have our core engineering in Cambridge.
Yep.
And then we're building centers in Poland as well.
Poland? What makes Poland?
Near shore then.
Near shore?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. I've never heard near shore before, but. Why? Because it's west. It's close to a Western market, or language. Yeah, very cool. Well, that's very cool. So listen, before we get to the break, let's talk a little bit about, you talked about these relationships you've developed at Cybos over the last 20 years, and you've been with the company 10 years. Have you been coming to Cybos for 10 years? So how have you seen Cybos change over those 10 years? Exactly, yeah.
And now it's a massive buzzword. You look at a lot of press coming, pre-silos and the things that banks are sending out or fintech or reg tech. There was a huge push on reg tech as an industry. And the view is in the market, and myself being in the reg tech space for 20 years, is in the next 5 years, reg tech will be $100 billion spent.
Wow.
And so banks are looking at how do we simplify it. So you're questioning on, okay, if you're opening an account, if you can do this, and we're competing with fintech, right? Meaning the big banks are, we need to be as digital as possible because there are new entrants.
Because the economics will be changing, yeah.
And to stay competitive, the banks between each other, I mean, if they can transact faster for a large corporate versus the big bank down the street, there is a massive competitive advantage, and regulation is really what's held it up, KYC regulation. So reg tech, and you can automate as much as possible and streamline not only the regulatory component, but the customer experience. There's a massive revenue gain.
Absolutely. Yeah. So what's been your favorite city for Cybos?
I'm kind of liking Sydney.
Have you been to Sydney before?
I've been here only for a couple of days.
Right.
There
is probably a similar feel, both Commonwealth countries and, historically and so forth. So, yeah. Although we don't say sorry as much as Canadians, Aussies. Yeah. You didn't have to apologize as much? Yeah. You must be Canadian. Well, I get that thing where, when I come back to Australia, I'm not quite Australian anymore because I've been offshore for 20 years. But it takes me about 2 days and my accent already starts to come back, Because when I'm in the US, I have this sort of international English. But when I come to Sydney, of course, I hear the Australian. So it's like 10 minutes in and I'm like, "Hey, go, mate," But so it is a bit of a, yeah, I'm sure. A boat, yeah. So you were in Toronto, were you? I mean, Toronto and Boston are not that far apart. Like, weather systems are similar and things like that. Yeah. I'm going off, but I'm interested. Tell me about your experience in terms of Boston culturally. How's that different from Toronto? Right. Yeah, lots of Asian influence and stuff like that. The food is incredible in Toronto, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Well, it's interesting to see sort of the U.S. grappling with this question, and not just U.S., obviously Brexit and, U.K., thinking about immigration role and things like that. But, countries like, Canada have actually built a brand of openness and multiculturalism, right? It is beautiful. Yeah. So now with this, coming back to banking, with sort of this open banking sort of initiatives that we're seeing and some of the regulatory challenges and things like that, there's some regulators that are really making a play for standing out based on the sandboxes they've created, the fintech licensing and things like that. So do you think over the next 10, 15 years, we're going to start to see regulators almost be competitive where they say, we're a great regulatory environment to attract talent, to attract fintech, to attract AI. And who would you say is sort of leading the charge there on a global basis? So this is the Monetary Authority of Singapore. Yep. That's it. I'll do the translation because we do have listeners on the AM band listening to the business news and stuff like that, so they won't know all this. But yeah, so keep going about it. MAS. Yeah. I would agree. Well, there's structural limitations in the US to changing regulation, right? Yeah. No, I know. No, we are. Well, it's. Yeah, we are a New York radio show, so hey, listen. Let's just take a quick break, Ritu, and then after the break, let's dive a little bit more into AI and how it's going to change regulation, financial crime, AML, that sort of stuff. Okay. All right, great. All right, so you guys, you're listening to Breaking Banks. We're just going to have a quick word from our sponsors, and we'll be right back after this break.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit Facebook.com/Voice America.
Have you become a member yet? Sign up now to become a member of Voice America. It's always free and easy. Plus, you get to take advantage of some great member benefits. Get unlimited access to millions of hours of on-demand content across all of our channels. Keep track of your favorite episodes, shows, and hosts in your own customizable library. Find out what shows you might be interested in based on your favorites. Plus, you get insider access with our newsletter. Membership gives you more. Sign up at voiceamerica.com and click register at the top right.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Breaking Banks featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or join the conversation on Twitter by using the hashtag #BreakingBanks. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to Breaking Banks. We are live from, well, it's pre-recorded actually now, but we are live right now in Cybos doing this show. We're talking to Pega. That's Pega Systems Inc., a US listed company who works on a lot of the stuff, the real building blocks of financial services. We've been talking about their presence at Cybos over the last 35 years, sorry. And Cybos, of course, been going for 40 years now, but you've been here almost since the day one. And, of course, the changes that are happening in terms of Pega. So we're with Ritu Khosla, who... what's your formal title at Pega again, Ritu? That's a long business card. Do you put it on the blockchain, the business card? Yeah. Well, they have these pretty cool things at Cybos this year. Our key fobs, the lanyards. Well, I've been using it a little bit. Yeah, it does. So the lanyard, for those who are listening on the air, because we're on radio, not on TV, right? So I've got to describe things because they're not looking at. So the lanyards have this little fob on them, and you push the button. And it's got three LED lights underneath it, and they light up. And if you touch these two fobs together, then it'll exchange information, and you get an email. It's sort of like speed dating Cybos edition, right? So Tinder for bankers. That's scary. That's scary. Yeah, I'm swiping left every time. Okay. All right, so let's just jump into AML. Now, of course, anti-money laundering. And on a global basis, many years ago, I guess it was in the mid-1980s, where we implemented FATF, or the Financial Action Task Force, came up with these rules, about 40 rules, to govern money laundering. And then, of course, 9/11 happened in the US, and so you now had a focus on terrorist financing and trying to stop the flow of criminal funds and terrorist-related funding from these suspicious actors. And the way we've done that historically is that we have this magical arbitrary $10,000 limit, right? Which is, if you do a $10,000 transaction or more that is out of character for you as an individual, or looks suspicious in some way, I don't know how that looks suspicious, but ultimately then we can flag these suspicious transactions. So still today we have this core activity within AML, where we're sort of trying to flag all of these suspicious transactions. We send them off to the central banker somewhere. And then what happens? What happens to these reports where we have a $10,000 or $100,000 transaction that is flagged? Correct. Right. Right. Right.
And so, you would create these rules and processes. And what would happen was, somebody internally then would file what we would call a suspicious activity report. And then they would go off to the government.
Right, so there used to be STRs, now they're SARs, right?
It's just.
Oh, STR, yeah. Yeah, sure, right.
And they would just go, and we would actually, when I used to run an investigative unit post 9/11, as per the regulations, we would actually physically mail them in, and in my office.
So the physical activity reports would come in the mail, and then what would you do with them?
No, we would mail them.
Oh, you mail them to the regulator. So this is the financial, FinCEN is the financial crime. Right, so these are the guys who are essentially responsible for identifying financial crimes and policing them. Yeah. Oh my goodness. So they would go through them physically, and then highlight those that they wanted to follow up, and then they'd form a task force or something to now investigate it. Oh man. So tell me how the technology does it now. I mean, now we submit digital versions of those paper reports, but is that the only improvement that's effectively been made? So KYC stands for kill your customers with paperwork? No, no. Know your customers, right. Yeah. Right. Eliminate those false positives and get to the real problems.
Yeah.
subsegment where you're choosing to cost them too much money to keep up with
right.
managing even the reporting standards, which is kind of
So how might AI get involved in this part of regulation? Because the reality is, despite all of this activity that's going on with AML, we're actually really, really bad on a global basis at stopping money laundering. The estimates are that we only stop about 1 to 2% of money laundering activity on a global basis, which is an appalling track record. With the billions, like in the US, I think they spend $50 billion on AML compliance annually or something like that. There's the figure. Yeah. Right. Yeah, that's just one bank. Right. And so with all of this money spent globally, we still are only able to stop 1 to 2% in money laundering. That's appalling to track record, but appalling performance. If you're a business and that was your business and you're only 1 to 2% effective, you'd be out of business, right? So then the question is, how do you think we'll use AI to improve that success rate?
So every time you learn something new, a new risk, a new rule, you would have to go in and code. It would take like months and months. You know,
right.
Even with KYC from an anti-money laundering perspective, you know, every time there is a rule change, there are banks that it would take them 12 months to change a rule. So with zero code technology, like our KYC technology, we've revolutionized that because you can actually change the rule in minutes,
yeah.
and it'll generate the UI,
yeah.
without coding. So you're taking what is a 12-month process, and you're implementing those rules up front. But I think the other major thing is that we always remember, when we talk about anti-money laundering and financial crime, anti-money launderers are very sophisticated.
They use all the tech, yeah?
They love the tech.
Yeah, absolutely. They can automate it. You know, I'll tell you, my daughter was caught up in an AML scheme recently.
No way.
She was recruited as a money mule.
No way.
Yeah. And so they offered on a legitimate job board, because she's in Australia.
Yeah.
She just turned 18. On a legitimate job board, they offered her a part-time job, right? And so it was like, you're going to be doing product reviews and things like this. But so she signed up for this thing going, this is pretty cool. I can work from home, part-time, you know, teleoperating sort of stuff. And then the first job they gave her was they sent her some money, right, through Western Union or something like that to her bank account. And they said, now what we want you to do is go to a Bitcoin exchange agent and exchange these funds for Bitcoin and tell us about the experience. Yeah, and so they were cleaning these funds, right? And so, of course, immediately, you know, she said, like, I don't even know what this is. What's they're talking about? And I recognized it as a money laundering operation. Yeah, and so then what I basically did at that point is I reported it to the authorities and did the official thing. The Acorn is the unit here in Australia that's responsible for that at a state level. We didn't even hear from them yet. We report it. So the money is still sitting in her bank account. So we'll see where that goes. But but how would AI change money laundering from a regulatory perspective? How would it enable regulators to catch up, do you think?
I think from an AI, from a
So if these machines can learn or model that behavior and learn the suspicious behavior, then all we'd need to do is monitor transactions. And it'd sort of be almost like cybersecurity, where you could trap someone trying to attack your system in real time, and you could then shut off a suspicious actor from participating in the financial system. Sounds like it would be much more effective than the system we have today. Yeah, exactly, yeah. No, we've gone from rotary phones to digital, but everyone else is using AI, so... That's very, very interesting. Well, listen, let's do this, Ritu. Let's get a comment from our expert RegTech advisor, Henry Aslanian. He's actually out at Money 2020 today, not at Cyber. So, but we'll pass to Henry and get some comments in terms of what he's seeing globally in terms of the use of AI in RegTech. Henry, what's your thoughts?
Absolutely, Brett. You know, I always say if fintech is making financial services exciting again, definitely RegTech is making regulatory and compliance super exciting again. And there's a lot of exciting stuff going on in the broader RegTech space. I mean, a great example, frankly, when it comes to RegTech and AI is the field of anti-money laundering. You know, Brett, you know, today banks spend billions of dollars a year to try to comply with the various, you know, anti-money laundering provisions, counter-terrorism financing provisions globally. However, it's a massive failure. You know, despite all the money that we're spending in this field, according to the UN, we're able to capture less than 2% of laundered transactions.
And we're talking about trillions of dollars of money laundering annually, right?
Absolutely.
So if this if you were a company providing the service, you'd be out of business because it's an appalling track record, right?
Oh, I mean, you'd be out of business. And frankly, as a consumer, I mean, think about all the pain that we go to you know, to try to comply with these provisions. And this is actually one space where RegTech can hopefully help, where, you know, RegTech is really what can help, you know, try to comply with these provisions, not only more effectively, but also more efficiently. And AI can obviously play a big role, not only making the process, you know, easier, but also reducing one of the biggest pain points when it comes to AML, which is false positives. You know, which are basically names that pop up, which shouldn't be there. And really, this is one of the most exciting areas, not only from because it can reduce the cost associated from a headcount perspective or time wasted, but frankly, help us do a better job. And 2%, the bar is pretty low.
Yeah. And of course, you know, given that it's a data problem, you know, some people have thought about the problem of money laundering and how regulators will evolve using AI to be something sort of like cybersecurity that ultimately will be able to track, you know, money movement, you know, these flow of funds, and will be able to identify suspicious actors at the source and sort of cut them out of the system. But that, you know, if you think about that as a possible way forward, there'd be a lot of things we have to change to be able to open up data cooperation, cross-border and things like that to really make that successful, right?
No, absolutely, Brett. You know, for example, you're right. A lot of the problems that we have with RegTech is obviously, as any RegTech startup would tell you, trying to imagine plugging fintech inside a bank is difficult. Try to plug RegTech inside a bank is even more difficult, you know, a part of the long sales cycles and the different hurdles that we all have to go through. As you can imagine, the cost of getting it wrong is definitely higher in the RegTech space when it comes to specific filings or certain regulatory provisions. This is why, you know, what we're seeing, Brett, which is very exciting, I would say where we're seeing the most cutting-edge activity when it comes to RegTech is actually, and a bit ironically, in the crypto space. And I'll give you a very simple example. I can say that right now, many of the crypto companies right now, not only crypto exchanges, but even ICOs, have probably better KYC and AML than a lot of the traditional banks. For the reason being, they're able to leverage the latest RegTech solutions out there, whether it's biometric information, whether it's AI in the back end for AML, and they're able to do a probably better job than a lot of the traditional banks because they don't have the legacy infrastructure. I mean, just right. Case in point, I just got a letter today from my bank in Hong Kong asking that I have to go in person because a teller has to review my ID card, make a photocopy, and put a little stamp saying it's a certified true copy, which frankly
that's
is
crazy.
A bit ridiculous in 2018.
Yeah, that's crazy, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, and even more than that, Brett, you know, examples like traceability. You know, for example, today, if, you know, one of the biggest problems facing the crypto community globally, it sounds, again, very stupid, but it's opening a bank account, a traditional bank account. And the reason many of the banks don't want to open an account for crypto companies is they say that they have concerns regarding AML or the source of funds of these crypto assets. And what's really remarkable right now, we're seeing a number of RegTech solutions come to the market that offer traceability for crypto assets. As you know, one of the biggest benefits of, like, for example, Bitcoin, is we can trace the history of that Bitcoin really from the time it was mine in the creation process. And this is actually really remarkable, the advances we're seeing in that field. And these are really RegTech solutions that are highly dependent on the data provided, you know, that it's available on the block, on the Bitcoin blockchain, for example, but really using AI to try to actually trace those solutions. And that, I have to say, is really, really exciting, and the advances that we're seeing in that space.
So who would you say is leading this from a jurisdiction perspective in terms of skill sets or investment in, you know, AI in the regulatory space?
Yeah, it's a good question, Brad. I think we're still seeing a lot of the traditional areas. For example, I would say when it comes to RegTech, we're still obviously seeing the UK and, you know, parts of Western Europe being pretty strong in this space, but also a lot of some parts of the US as well. We're seeing some interesting companies come out as well. Although I have to say, I think one of the effects of the deregulation, you know, the whole movement with Donald Trump, where we try to deregulate the industry, has probably had an impact on the RegTech industry, because for a lot of financial institutions, they're less willing to commit when they don't know how the regulatory landscape will look in a couple of months. But one area that we've been seeing a lot of activity recently is, again, when it comes in Asia. For example, you know, one of the companies that are super advanced when it comes to RegTech are actually the large technology firms in China. You know, the regular BATs, the Baidus, Alibabas, and Tencent. And many of them had to develop their own RegTech solutions simply because, I mean, they couldn't find the solutions they wanted. And now one trend we may see over the coming months is some of these large technology firms start offering their services to the broader financial services industry. And actually, hopefully, this is going to be a big catalyst where hopefully some of the banks will be more comfortable buying from these large technology firms rather than startups. So it's very exciting times, especially in Asia, when it comes to RegTech.
So if you were, let's first of all say, if you were a regulator today, you know, you're in the US or you're in Hong Kong, and you know, you're seeing these advancements coming up, you know, what would be your plan of attack?
Well, I think, Brett, when it comes to regulators, many of them have been looking at RegTech for some time. But, you know, obviously we call this SupTech, which is basically supervisory technology. And a number of regulators have been looking actively in this space already. For example, the SEC is reported to have an army of PhDs looking at the topic. And the FCA has been doing some work as well. And one recent example is actually the MAS here in Singapore, in Asia. For example, the MAS has been looking at a lot of the suspicious transaction reporting. You know, they call them STRs, and there's more than 3,000 that are filed every month. And this is actually one area where the MAS is trying to see how they can use SupTech, obviously again using AI, to try to reduce the workload that is coming up from on that perspective. But also the other benefits as well. For example, about a year ago. Actually, almost a year ago, day for day, the MAS announced that they were working on initiatives in this space. And one of the announcements they made, which I found it was quite interesting, they said that, you know, that if they request a certain piece of information from a bank, and the bank provides that information, and if the regulator goes back and asks for that same information a separate time, you know, a second time or separately, the bank has technically the right to refuse it, saying that they have provided it already. And that is actually a very interesting way, and again, a great initiative from a regulator to try to lead by example when it comes to the use of RegTech and SupTech.
Now, ultimately, given that we're putting all this technology in, and you know, the focus is on supervisory technology, so you know, basically sucking in all of this data about how the banks are working, how these transactions are occurring, and analyzing them, you know, for, as you say, suspicious transactions or suspicious activity. You know, instances that they can then pass off to the financial crime unit or whatever. But we're really talking about more and more regulation becoming encoded in law, and the regulator themselves taking more of a supervisory role, particularly from a data perspective. What does that do to the relationship between law, you know, the Houses of Parliament and the Senate and these functions of government that typically have been the way we've created regulation, if it's now computer code or will be in the future?
Oh, absolutely. I think the legal profession will change a lot over the next coming years. I mean, frankly, if we look today, I was reading recent data that something like 80% of the U.S. population does not have access to adequate legal services. You know, and one of the reasons is, frankly, the cost is very high. I'm sure many of your listeners, you know, over the last couple of years, they wanted to speak to a lawyer or they needed some legal services, but often they didn't because they thought it was going to cost too much money. And one of the reasons behind that is, you know, according to some research, and I mentioned this in a recent TEDx talk that I gave that is available actually online, you know, some lawyers spend up to 1/3 to 1/4 of their time doing legal research, which frankly could be done using a lot of the new law tech solutions are in the market. When it comes to the relationship with actually governments, legislators, but also, you know, when it comes, you know, with the law societies themselves, I think the entire profession needs to change. You know, over the last couple of years, there's been a number of studies that came up, you know, trying to predict the impact that, you know, AI is going to have on lawyers. You know, some studies predict that 25 to 40% of legal jobs will disappear. The other actually more extreme ones that actually predict the structural collapse of law firms. The reality is actually we need to train lawyers with these knowledge. For example, I've been a big advocate that, you know, for example, in law schools, we need to teach, you know, smart contract coding. We need to have a master's degrees in legal coding or legal data scientists that really focus on this field. And this is something that doesn't take place right now, but I hope is going to take place in the future.
Great. Well, Henry Aslanian, thanks for joining us again on Breaking Banks and giving us your insight.
Always a pleasure being back, Brett. Thank you.
Thank you.
So that was Henry Aslanian's thought on sort of the regulatory capture and what's happening globally in terms of regulators sort of playing with artificial intelligence in this space. Now, in terms of some of the other stuff that Pega Systems is working on, tell us where Pega is going to go over the next 10 years, because obviously we've been at Cyburst for 35 years. What are you guys investing in that's going to be, you think, the future of your business? I love that. All in real time. Let's underline that with a big, yeah. So, you know, who are the banks that you've worked with over the last, or the financial institutions you've worked with over the last 35 years? Give a shout out for some of your clients at Pega. Tell me about who you work with. So here's a tough question. Well, it's not really a tough question, but it's a little sensitive. So of all of those organizations, who do you think are amongst some of the most progressive in as traditional financial services organizations? They should say we put the ing in banking or something, right? You know? That's right. Right. How do we rethink? Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So how can people find out more information about Pega Systems? Pega Onboarding. And what about connecting with you personally? What's the best way to connect with you personally and your team? Okay. And do you have a Twitter ID or LinkedIn or anything like that? Okay, so we can find you Ritu Khosla. Ritu, R-E-E-T-U, Khosla, K-H-O-S-L-A. And we can find you on LinkedIn. Great. Well, Ritu, thank you very much for joining us on Breaking Banks. It's been an enlightening discussion. You've been an engaging guest, which we really appreciate. You've made my work easier. And all the best for the rest of Cybos. What? I'm glad. That's what we aim to please. Great. All right, thanks.
Thank you very much.
That's it for Breaking Banks this week. Thanks again for joining us. Don't forget to give us a shout out. Go to @BreakingBanks1 on Twitter, or you can tweet out to me, Brett King, @BrettKing on Twitter. Leave us a review on iTunes or tweet out one of the shows you like. Just help us get the word out there. Speak to your colleagues about us. It all helps. Helps us get the podcast audience up, and of course that brings a sponsorship in, which allows us to continue to run the podcast for you guys. So appreciate you listening, and we'll be back next week with another Breaking Banks.
You've been listening to Breaking Banks with host Brett King. Please be sure to join us again next Thursday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time, for more of the latest in fintech news.